This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
So, I'm an OBGYN. I've been practicing since 1998. If you include my residency training, I've probably taken care of roughly 8,000 pregnant women. I was completely in shock when they ever toyed with the idea of providing pregnant women these injections they call vaccinations, because we never give anything brand new to a pregnant patient. And, you know, we tell them not to eat tuna fish, don't color your hair, but let's go get this brand new experiment injected in your arm. It just didn't make sense to me. And so when they started when our governing bodies began recommending these injections, I became very concerned because I was worried that there was going to be, you know, not a very good outcome from that. And in all honesty, you know, during 2020, when the pandemic or whatever you want to call it was occurring, I mean, we did have some sick patients. We did hospitalize a lot of patients just for observation, but I never had a pregnant woman end up on a ventilator during 2020. We didn't have any deaths from COVID during that year. So, I mean, our pregnant patients did well for the most part. So I honestly don't feel that they would have needed this anyway, even if we thought this was a good thing for them. So,
okay, so just for clarity, there was an increase in miscarriages after the vaccine, so-called vaccine rollout.
Correct. So I have my own data that I tabulated and sent to Jessica Rose, and I have that as one of my slides I can show you. But definitely in our VAERS system, which is the Vaccine Advent or Adverse Event Reporting System, I have a picture of that as well. It kind of skyrockets with the amount of miscarriages that were reported to that site, which goes back to 1990. With comparison to all vaccinations, there's a huge spike in the amount of miscarriages and stillbirths once the vaccines were provided. We did not see that in 2020. So clearly in 2021, that spike was due to the injections.
Okay. All right. Okay. So just for clarity, during the course of 2020, you're suggesting that there wasn't anything necessarily unusual other than the fact that with all these lockdowns and these ridiculous top-down impositions of is just ridiculous. We all know what happened. But then when the vaccine rollout started occurring in 2021, you're saying that there was an increase in women miscarrying.
Correct. And actually everything in pregnancy that can go wrong started occurring that year. And that was the shtick that our governing bodies used to get people to inject our pregnant patients. They said, well, your pregnant woman's going to be more at risk for premature labor or preeclampsia, which is high blood pressure in pregnancy, or all these things that can go wrong in a pregnancy, they would be at higher risk for if they had contracted COVID infection. Okay. But I didn't see that in 2020. I saw that after the injections rolled out. A lot of the problems happened with our pregnant moms.
How quickly?
I would have to say, you know, a lot of first responders got the injections in December and January of 2021, which would have been, you know, some of them would have been, you know, pregnant women, nurses, doctors, et cetera. The majority of the rest of the people started getting the injections that spring. So I would have to say probably by the mid to latter portion of 2021 is when we started to see a lot of things go badly. Now, we had also seen, you know, the menstrual periods had become irregular as well in a lot of patients that received these injections. And clearly, if your menstrual period is not functioning properly, your cycle, that's going to affect fertility and possibly a pregnancy as well. So
I had a Freudian slip earlier when I said death, but there have been a lot of deaths. And I know that's not what we're chatting about, but did you notice any of that too?
Fortunately, no. And I didn't see a spike in the stillbirth rates in my region. I actually had our maternity ward run some analytics, and our stillbirth rates on our unit from 2020 until 2023 were the same level. So we didn't see a spike in that. But there were other parts of our country and world where the stillbirths did, you know, accelerate in number.
That's interesting, because a previous guest of mine, Dr. Stuart Fishbein, who chatted to me, I don't know if you listened to that one. It was an incredible conversation about the over-medicalization of childbirth. And yes. On his podcast, I forget which one it was now, but he spoke about how in the state of California, they have stopped registering stillbirths, coincidentally, from around 2021, 2022.
Yes. There's a lot of data, even my state of Florida, that you can't get. I've been trying to get some cancer data from my state. You can't get it from after 2021 because I've been seeing a huge increase in breast and other malignancies. But yes, there is a nurse, Michelle Gershwin, who is a whistleblower that Dr. James Thorpe has connected with, and her hospital system saw a huge rise in stillbirths. There are some areas in Canada. I know Scotland had a huge increase in their stillbirth rate, and that may be somehow related to certain lot numbers of these injections, because definitely if you're in the vaccine-injured community, you can trace a lot of the injured people back to similar lot numbers of these injections.
I'm a fan of absolutely zero vaccines of any kind, so a conversation like this is fairly easy for me because I just kind of reject all of it. But when you talk about the vaccines, the COVID vaccine, are you just talking about the mRNA?
Yes. So in the United States, we had Pfizer was the predominant product. The next was Moderna. And then we had a few that got the J&J, which was the, it's still, that was the DNA adenovirus, not messenger RNA. Those were the three products in our country. So we didn't have, we probably didn't have some of the options you had in Africa. But yes, I'm mainly talking about the messenger RNA. And like you now, I am very, what would you say, anti-vax. Prior to 2020, however, you know, I have two adult children. They've had every vaccine that they, you know, that would have been required on the schedule. And I used to get an annual flu vaccine. But I've gone down very many rabbit holes now since COVID started. And if I can help it, my grandchildren will not have any injections.
I think a very good way of looking at it is just simply the lack of trust in the medical industry now. Mm-hmm. And I really don't like saying that because there are so many good doctors, even yourself, for example, and you all get lumped into now the same thing, the medical industry. But it really does seem to have destroyed its image in the last few years.
Yeah, it's sad. And I've been asked this before, you know, how is it that so many doctors fell in step and just, you know, couldn't think about, you know, what was happening? And I often joke if, you know, Tony Fauci had told everybody to slap a dildo on their forehead, they would have done it, you know. But I feel that when I started medical school in the early 1990s was when the concept of evidence-based medicine started. And what that basically is was the beginning of cookbook medicine, where there's algorithms you go down to find a diagnosis, and then you have a cookbook recipe for how you're supposed to manage or treat the condition. And if you veer off of either path, then you're questioned. Well, why are you doing this? Why are you not doing this? You have to go in front of peer review. You might lose your medical license. And I think the two things that that system caused, which I'm not saying standardization is not a good thing, but it's caused doctors to, A, not question authority because they feel whoever created this evidence knows more than them. And the second thing is there's no need to think anymore, see, because you're just looking at algorithms and recipes. So we've really lost the practice of medicine. You know, we treat patients as if they come off an assembly line and everybody gets the same treatment and not everybody's built the same. We model a lot of medical practices after the airline industry, and you can clearly see how that's going with Boeing. So, you know, so I think that's why. And sadly, too, you know, medicine in the United States is very corporatized. There's very few standalone physicians. Everybody has a boss, and nobody wants to lose their job. Mm. And sadly, in all of this, you know, who suffers most but the patients? So,
Kim, going back to the miscarriages, when you say there was a spike, what sort of numbers are we talking about?
Okay. So let me just open my slides here. So if you were to go to a website that's called OpenVAERS, what that does is it takes the VAERS data and it puts it in a graph so you can see the numbers. And if you go back to 1990 and you're looking at, they put together both miscarriages and stillbirths. They don't separate them out in the VAERS system. But if you go back to 1990, there were essentially very few numbers in those that were reported for many vaccinations. But when you hit 2021, there in the system now, there's 3,500 claims that were made in 2021. And when you go to the following year, that number drops in half. And that's probably because, thankfully, the majority of patients, at least in my pregnancy population, only got two or three injections. They weren't getting all the boosters. I mean, up until this point, I think if you got everything that was offered, you'd be up to seven or eight injections. Most of my pregnant women got, you know, only two or three, and the majority were Pfizer. But the other numbers that I wanted to discuss with you, and what I presented to Jessica Rose, was when I tabulated my data. Now, granted, I'm a small practice. We deliver about 300 babies a year. But I went back to January of 2020 and I tabulated data up till October of 2022. And I looked at women who were newly pregnant that registered with our practice. So that would have been, you know, first trimester pregnant women. And then I looked at the number of deliveries we had, and I looked at the miscarriages for every month. And in 2020, we had the best year as far as newly pregnant patients. We had the most deliveries of that year, and that was mainly in November and December of 2020. And wink, wink, that was probably due to the lockdowns. We called them Rona babies. We had very few miscarriages that year. The average running month to month was about 4%, which is a normal miscarriage rate. What is quoted in some textbooks and articles of 13 to 15% is not correct. As far as a miscarriage rate, I've never seen that in clinical practice. 2020 was normal. Now, when you go to 2021, not only did the number of newly registered patients start to decline, but the miscarriage rates in my practice went up 100%. For month to month, the average rate was 8%. We had a peak that year in November, and that was probably because a lot of people were getting the boosters around that time. And then when you went to the following year, 2022, we had a further decline in the amount of newly registering patients, which that is all representative of infertility and possibly newly miscarrying and just not calling us for an appointment because you've already lost your pregnancy. But the miscarriage rate doubled again, and my average month to month was 15%. Now, that was up till November of 2022. In December of that year, my miscarriage rate was 27%. In January and February of 2023, it went up to 30%, and it didn't start to normalize back until about June or July of last year. And the concern with that is, as I have previously stated, I mean, the majority of my patients had only two or three injections. So, and this would have been in 2021. So something was still, you know, lingering that was causing these miscarriages to happen because they weren't newly injected with the vaccine. So that was what I noticed.
What stage in the pregnancy were these miscarriages happening?
Yeah, so a miscarriage is defined as a pregnancy loss prior to 20 weeks, prior to halfway. If you lose a pregnancy after 20 weeks, that's the definition of a stillbirth. So I was primarily looking at miscarriages. I will tell you, in my practice, we had two stillbirths in the 3 years that I was tracking things, and that's not an unusual number. And they were both explained. I will tell you, one of them was probably vaccine related because the umbilical cord to the baby was completely clotted off. And her loss occurred about a month after she had received a booster. What we're told from our governing bodies, like the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, is that if a woman gets a respiratory virus and she's pregnant, she's going to get sicker than a non-pregnant woman because of the changes in her anatomy, and some other changes that occur during pregnancy. And that's kind of the shtick to give all of our pregnant patients the flu vaccine. And depending upon when you're pregnant, by the way, if you span two flu seasons, you're supposed to give them two flu vaccines. So they could potentially get two during a pregnancy. And during the H1N1 period of time, which was back in 2009, 2010, I believe, you not only got the vaccine for H1N1, but the regular flu vaccine. Mm. So those pregnant patients could have potentially had two or three injections in one pregnancy. I will tell you, in 30 years, I've never had a pregnant woman die of the flu. I mean, I've had some admitted just for observation, but I would argue, you know, they say pregnant women are immunocompromised, but I would argue the opposite. I think there's something protective in pregnant women because I don't have a sickly patient population, and I have a very varied, you know, demographic and age group of people. I mean, all ethnicities, etc. And they're not sickly people. So I think there's something protective in women. I think they've been telling us the opposite, so we give them shots.
In terms of your miscarriages that you were seeing, were there any anomalies? Was it just across the board?
So I also did not see any increase in anomalies in birth defects. I know Dr. Thorpe definitely has some data on that. In our region, I didn't see that. And I was the chief of staff of my hospital from 2020 until December of last year. So I would have been aware of, you know, that if there was other, you know, obstetricians in town or in the community, because there's other hospitals that also deliver by mine, if there had been, you know, an increase in anomalies or stillbirths. I didn't see that. Mm.
Let me play devil's advocate, because you know that the counter argument would be, well, it wasn't the vaccine. It was COVID or long COVID or whatever.
So I feel that, you know, a lot of long COVID is probably because there are people genuinely that had a COVID infection and have long COVID. And I'm not going to say that that's not a thing. But I think a lot of people may have been exposed to COVID or had a case of, you know, COVID infection. And then they were told, well, there's no such thing as an immune system. So now you still have to get these shots. And then they got the injections And now they have long COVID because there's no shutoff mechanism for these shots. There are still vaccine injured people that are still producing spike protein, and they haven't had an injection for over 3 years. So I think a lot of long COVID is actually, you know, vaccine injury, you know?
These miscarriages, you were talking about boosters. So were you noticing a trend in not necessarily the first shot, but like the second and third and so on?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So the spike in miscarriages in my practice occurred in November of 2021. So that would have followed either somebody's second or third injection. So not right immediately did I see a problem with this. So yes, it was more with subsequent injections.
I know you don't know the answer, but maybe you could just speculate. But do you think that those mothers who got the shots, multiple shots, and didn't miscarry could end up with some problems either with themselves or the baby?
So there's an article that came out this year in our Gray Journal, the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, that showed fully intact messenger RNA in placentas and the umbilical cords, which means that's going to the baby. You know, Tony Fauci said this was going to stay in your arm, which on its face makes no sense, because if you're going to inject something in the arm and it stays in the arm, what the hell is it doing for the rest of the body? But we know through FOIA information the Japanese obtained, you know, the lipid nanoparticles go everywhere in the body, and the lipid nanoparticles are the fatty envelope around these messenger RNA components, and they go everywhere in the body and highly concentrated in the rats that they studied in the rat ovaries. The other thing we know that's also now in these vials, thanks to Kevin McKernan and other people that have verified this, is there's also fragmented DNA in these vials, to which quickly the FDA said, well, there's a safe amount of DNA that can be injected into humans. However, they're basing that on a rat study for one, and for two, that DNA was not protected by the lipid nanoparticles. So if the RNA and the lipid nanoparticles are getting into the baby, well, so isn't this DNA. And my concern, like diethylstilbestrol or DES daughters, is that this is going to be a multi-generational problem, because these genetic things are probably getting into the gametes, which are the eggs of the baby's ovaries. And so what does that mean? You know, we're not going to know until these females, when they're of pubertal age, either don't go through puberty or they can't have a baby, they're infertile. We're just not going to know.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Infertility.
Yes, which has definitely increased. The birth rate globally had been trending down prior to COVID starting, but there are some areas of the world where it's drastically dropped. There's some parts of the world where now the birth rates have significantly lowered to where they're less than the death rates of those populations, and that's a first in many decades.
Kim, I ask so many people this, and I'm going to ask you also, because I don't know what the answer is, but I do like to know what people like yourself think. But how is it that so many people just didn't think about this, and so mm-hmm. few of us did?
Yeah, again,
do you think it was fear?
I don't know. So the fear was on the populace. The fear was not to create this thing. This thing was, I mean, you've had people on your show, you know, this was not invented with warp speed. This stuff was already made. The fear was definitely a factor. I mean, I will tell you, to get a pregnant woman to take any medication.
Yes.
Takes an act of God.
Yes.
They won't even take an aspirin.
But I've just been through that.
Yes, but 65 to 70% of our pregnant women went and lined up for these injections. And I will tell you, Dr. Thorpe's wife, Maggie's an attorney, and through FOIA, she uncovered the fact that ACOG in April of 2021 received $11 to $13 million through a trust that was set up by HHS, which is our Health and Human Services, which is our tax dollars, to market these injections. They wanted us, and the state, if you pull up ACOG and you look up COVID, it still says today to inject every woman thinking of getting pregnant, pregnant, or breastfeeding, because if they get COVID, they're going to die. You know, I mean, it's crazy. In 2024, they're still saying this. So they marketed this. And if you can get, who usually makes the medical decisions in a family? The wife, the woman, the mother. And so this was heavily marketed to women. And, you know, Pfizer made, I don't know, trillions of bucks. I mean, it's all money. It's follow the money, as sadly as most things are in medicine today, you know.
And that sort of horseshoes to what you were saying in the beginning of the conversation about medicine being corporatized.
Yes.
They've got to make a profit. You know, you've got to turn over beds, that sort of thing.
Yes. So I'll give you another example of that. So about a month and a half ago, I went to the emergency room myself because sadly I thought I was having a stroke. My balance was way off. When I would get up, I would keep being pulled to the right. The room wasn't spinning, but just something wasn't right. So when you get admitted for what they call a stroke alert, they're also looking at your heart because, you know, it may be because something's going on with your heart. So one of the things they drew on me was a cholesterol panel. By the way, I'm fine. They scanned my brain twice. There's a brain. I'm normal, despite what people say. And it just ended up being, right, it just ended up being vertigo. But anyway, they drew my cholesterol panel. My cholesterol's through the roof because I've been ketogenic since 2018.
So that sounds pretty good.
So it's good because, you know, data's now showing the lower your cholesterol, the more likely you are to die.
Mm.
And they wanted to send me home on a statin because the hospital gets financially incentivized, see, if they click the button that says, oh, we found this and we sent this patient home on a statin. Well, I mean, I will never take a statin. I mean, statins are probably what's causing heart disease and Alzheimer's and everything else. So I said, that's fine. I'm happy with my 330 level cholesterol. We're good. So, yeah, I was almost a victim of it myself, but I said, no, thank you. So
you mentioned breastfeeding a moment ago, and that's mm-hmm. also, I mean, it's not related to miscarriages, but let's just say now that you had mothers taking the shots and ended up delivering a baby. Do you think that the jab would have any influence over the breast milk?
Yes, I absolutely do. We have two papers. They were both written by the same authors, but the second paper was just a confirmatory with different test subjects to the first paper that showed fully intact messenger RNA in mother's breast milk, which is interesting, right? Because they received an injection in their arm, and yet they have fully intact messenger RNA in the breast milk, but the breast milk is a body fluid. Pfizer told all their male trial participants, by the way, to not have sex. And if you do engage in intercourse, to wear two condoms and be sure the woman is on a contraceptive method. So they knew, obviously, that this stuff was transmitted in bodily fluids. The Pfizer aftermarket data, which they were mandated to publish in February of 2021, of course, none of us had any ability to view that until the following year. We had obtained that information through FOIA. But it showed in the 270 women that got pregnant after receiving these injections, there were some babies that had reactions to the breast milk, which also tells us that this is possibly surviving the gut. And you know they want to put this in our food, you know, our livestock and whatnot, at least in the United States. I don't know about it in, you know, in your continent. But obviously it survives the gut. So that's a concern too. But yes, it's in the breast milk. And who knows how for how long, because again, there's no shut off for this. And there's no, it can incorporate into the genome. We've seen that, you know, obviously in vitro studies, but both RNA and obviously DNA can incorporate into the genetics of the cells. So, you know, what does that mean for these babies? And the other thing to remember is this lipid nanoparticle technology was originally developed to get products across barriers, such as the blood-brain barrier. It was developed to get chemotherapeutics into the brain. What is this stuff now going to do with our babies' brains? We don't know.
Let's just say that you're not skeptical, right? And that you're okay with vaccines. Let's just ride that wave for a moment. And you enter 2020 and they say, look, there's this amazing technology, vaccines that normally take 10 to 15 years to develop and put onto the market. This one will take 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. At that point, even then, you should be thinking to yourself, hold on, how do you get a vaccine onto the market even in 6 months?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why products take a long time to get on the market, because they have to be studied. And especially in pregnant women, you're dealing with two patients. It's not just the woman. Now you have to be sure the baby, you know, reaches developmental milestones, etc. I mean, you just, and I will tell you, there was a doctor that showed me a video. They made this kind of animated video, and I'll never forget it. It was about October of 2020, showing how these products worked. And I looked at him and I said, well, that looks to me like an autoimmune reaction. And he's like, what? And I said, yeah, well, the body, you're making the body make a protein to which now the body's making an antibody to. I said, that's an autoimmune reaction. And he laughed in my face. And now what are we seeing with a lot of vaccine injured people? They have all these weird autoimmune reactions. Because, you know, you make, and you're not only making the spike protein, it doesn't work perfectly. You're making Frankenstein proteins too. You don't even know what kind of proteins you're making. And if you have another protein like that in your body, you know, now whatever antibodies may have been made, it's going to attack, you know, that part of your body. And I remember way in the beginning, you may know who, I think he's Filipino. He's in Europe. Sukrit Bhakti.
Yes.
He was very concerned because the syncytial layer, which is the layer of the embryo as it's trying to implant into the uterine wall, has proteins very similar to spike protein. And he was concerned that whatever antibodies would be created after these injections would possibly attack pregnancies. And look what we saw, increased miscarriages, and now the infertility's down.
And who knows what else?
And what else? Yeah.
Do you think that we're sitting with you're talking about having a hurricane in Florida. Do you think we're dealing with a hurricane in the next 25 to 50 years on a global level?
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of injured people around the globe. The cancer rates have skyrocketed. I mean, in my profession, you know, obviously the more common one I would see would be breast. I have a patient who's been a long-term patient of mine. She owns a wig store in my community, and she came to see me last year, and she said, I can't tell you how many women are coming in my store for wigs that have had chemotherapy for breast cancer. She's like, I've never seen this before, you know? And women too that have been in remission for many, many years, and now all of a sudden they have a recurrence. I had one woman. I recommended no injections to any of my patients, and she came to see me for her annual exam. She wasn't pregnant, and she asked me about the shots. I told her not to get the shots. She got two Pfizer. She had bilateral breast cancer, and this past year she had a metastasis to her brain. She had a craniotomy, and her oncologist said, I've never seen this before. Breast cancer doesn't usually metastasize to the brain. Well, if this stuff gets across your blood-brain barrier, there you go, you know? And she actually said to me, you told me not to get those injections. And I said, yeah, you know, it's sad.
Is there a comeback? I mean, is there light at the end of the tunnel for some of these moms who've perhaps had one shot or even two shots, had a miscarriage, and like, okay, whoa, something's wrong here. I need to fix things.
You know, fortunately, a lot of people, because the quality control for the production of these products was not very good. So a lot of people probably got duds, you know, non-functional, broken down, useless stuff.
Or just placebos.
Or maybe just saline, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you got these injections and you got really sick or had a bad reaction, then you probably got the real thing. But a lot of people say, well, I don't know what these people are talking about. I got these shots. I was fine. Well, you probably didn't get the real stuff. And, you know, if you're a mom and you had a miscarriage, but you don't recall having any kind of reaction to these shots, you're probably fine. If you did, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's anything, you know, you can now give yourself to reverse genetic incorporation into your cells. I mean, I don't know how you can reverse that, but, you know, as far as spike protein production and whatnot, you know, there's a lot of things that people are recommending, but one that's very inexpensive and everybody can do is fasting. When you fast, especially for a prolonged period of time, you cause your body to essentially take out the trash and get rid of things in it and bad cells that aren't supposed to be in it anymore. But, you know, eat healthy. You know, I'm keto, so I already, you know, do that, try to do that. I mean, I cheat, but, you know. But, you know, try to eat healthy organic foods, nothing processed. Try to put sugar is a big, you know, that cancer and a lot of bad things need sugar, so try to avoid sugar. You know, I'm probably toxic on vitamin D. You know, take a lot of vitamin D, get in the sun without sunscreen, exercise, you know, all the healthy things to try to combat what might be brewing in the body. But if there's gene incorporation, you know, genetics that have incorporated into the genome, how do you reverse that? I don't think you can, you know.
Do you agree with my previous guest, the one who is an OBGYN, and since you are also one, that the medical industry is over-medicalizing children and just about everybody, actually?
Yes. Is that Stu you're talking about, Fishbein? Mm-hmm. Fishbein. Yeah, I had an hour and a half long conversation with him about a year ago. I got connected with him, with Dr. Christian Northrup. And, you know, he, at the end of our talk, he said, you know, I really enjoyed having this talk with you. He said, when are you going to start doing home births? And I said, I'm too chicken shit for that. But I do agree. I think we do way too much to our patients. I mean, people have been birthing for, you know, thousands of years or more. And I don't know if he brought this up, but, you know, there's a statement that's put out by ACOG that basically, you know, says if a woman gives birth at home, she's more likely to have a bad outcome, as is the baby. And then they list 45 references. I have a friend who's trying to now get her midwifery degree, and her paper she had to write was on a controversial subject, so she decided to choose home birthing. And she said, they don't expect you to do this, but I read every single reference they listed, and in all actuality, they all supported home births.
Mm.
You're more likely to have a bad outcome if you go to the hospital. But we do over-medicate the moms. We give them all this medication, and then the baby's not even 24 hours old, and they want to give them a hepatitis vaccine. They give them a vitamin K shot because supposedly they're all going to hemorrhage. Where are all these babies hemorrhaging in the rest of the world that don't deliver in hospitals? That's not a thing, you know?
My son didn't get any of that.
Good. And he'll be healthy. And there's definitely data showing that vaccinated children, just like Bobby Kennedy has spoken about numerous times, vaccinated children are so much sicker than unvaccinated children. You know, I mean, there's things now that he didn't see. He says all the time, you know, 11 siblings, I don't know how many cousins he had. Nobody had a peanut allergy. Nobody had an autoimmune disease. Nobody had asthma. Nobody was going to the pediatrician all the time sick. You know, we are not a healthy country in the United States. I mean, we consume 4% of the population is what we represent around the globe. And we consume over half of all pharmaceuticals in the world. And we're not healthy, and we're the most injected with these vaccines.
Do you think we have become too reliant on antibiotics and vaccines?
I do. And Tylenol, too. You know, Tylenol is not the healthiest thing, you know, because it's decreasing the body's ability to naturally detoxify. But everybody's popping Tylenol every time they get a fever, you know. There's a lot of things that... you know, our bodies were built, we were born with an immune system, right? And somehow, you know, ever since Fauci's been involved with the field of immunology, which is in the title of what he was in, but evidently none of us have been born with an immune system because we all need these shots. It's crazy.
Do you find kids, babies, toddlers are healthier if they've been through a natural birth as opposed to a C-section?
So, yes, I've never tracked that. And for me, you know, we see women 6 weeks after they deliver a baby, and then I will see them, you know, on an annual basis. I don't usually see the child because then the child, you know, would go to their pediatrician. So, I don't really have any way of tracking that, but it's interesting that you bring that up because prior to 2020, if anybody would have ever spoken to me about the microbiome in the gut, I would have been like, well, that's voodoo ridiculousness, right? Now I don't think that way because I've gone down all these rabbit holes now, but clearly if a baby delivers vaginally and you haven't been giving the mother antibiotics during labor, because some women get antibiotics if they have the group B strep bacteria. But if they haven't gotten antibiotics and the baby goes through the vaginal canal and now is exposed to those bacteria, that's how the baby builds its own, you know, gut microbiome. Now, if the mom's been on antibiotics and now you're essentially probably sterilizing that environment, or we deliver the baby via C-section, that whole process is not happening. And then on top of that, you're giving them a vaccine within the first 24 hours of life, which if they even had delivered naturally, you know, now you're probably killing off all those bacteria with the shot. So I definitely feel that we are harming some babies now by delivering them in certain ways that we do, yes.
So what do we do, Kim?
Get on one of Elon's rockets and go to another planet. My hope, I was actually crying when I was watching Bobby Kennedy's speech. I met him twice over the last year when he gave his speech suspending his campaign to join forces with Trump, because that's the only avenue he has in order to get into the administration and get in our White House. And I feel that Americans need, I was part of the Rescue the Republic event this past weekend in DC. And I really feel that if people want to save our country and make our country healthy again, we need to get Trump and Kennedy in DC. Because Kennedy will surround himself with people that can get this accomplished, because every agency in our government is completely captured by Big Pharma. I mean, we're one of two countries, New Zealand being the other one, where direct, you know, product to consumer advertising is legal. And because of that, Pfizer, everything's brought to you by Pfizer. You know, they own everybody. They own all our politicians. All our research is paid for. You know, it's just, it's so corrupted. And we need to get rid of the corruption, and we need to get back to practicing medicine and individualizing patient care and not treating everybody the same way. And go to the doctor, by the way, when you're sick. You know, this preventative care model and, you know, well visits for kids every 3 months is just a reason to give them vaccines.
Kim, the thing now is, what do you think happened then in 2020 with the warp speed? I kind of agree with you. I think that Trump and Kennedy are probably the best that America has right now, and I think it would be a fairly dynamic duo. But what happened in 2020?
I know one of the people that was involved in the White House task force that Vice President Pence was in charge of, that was headed by, not Fauci, actually, Deborah Birx was the head of that committee. The
and
scarf
she was
lady.
She was employed by Matt Pottinger.
Yes. The person I know, Dr. Stephen Hatfill, he was in the room with those people, and he knew right away that Fauci and Birx didn't know their ass from a hole in the ground. And there were screaming matches and papers flying, and they had secured enough hydroxychloroquine in March of 2020 to where we could have treated all the elderly people and the people that were sick, and we wouldn't have even been talking about COVID in April of that year. But, you know, someone down the chain wanted these vaccines made, and that's when they started to vilify hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, because, of course, we had to get emergency use. I have two thoughts on that. First and foremost, Trump was very ill-advised. Trump is not a doctor. He's a businessman, okay? And he wanted to do, I truly believe that Trump loves his country and his people. I feel that he was ill-advised. Now, the problem with Trump is he has an ego, and he doesn't want to admit failure, right?
Yes.
And he thinks that the fact that he got this product on the market in a quick amount of time was the best thing he could have done. And there's many Trump supporters who do feel, as I do, that he needs to apologize, realize he was misinformed, and, you know, state that these are not good things. They have not saved millions of lives. I mean, first of all, you have no control group to base that statement on, right? I mean, how many people got COVID did fine? I mean, you can't, they're basing that number on the statistics that the guy from the UK gave in the very beginning. I can't think of his name.
Yes.
Him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he predicted in our country alone, we were supposed to have 2.5 million deaths by the summer of 2020. We've not even reached that now. It's been 4 years later, you know? He
was
way off with his stats. Let me pull up my...
I haven't thought about him in years. I was going to almost say Drosten, but he was the guy who did the PCR protocol.
Neil Ferguson.
Ferguson, yeah. And he was caught out going to parties,
yes,
and all sorts of stuff.
Yes, well, he was way off because Dr. John Ioannidis, who's from Stanford here, studied 31 countries in 2020 and calculated per age group the infection fatality rates, and they were way less. I mean, a child has a 3 in a million risk of dying from COVID. But we're injecting 6-month-old babies in the United States with COVID vaccines.
It's insane.
I mean, why? I think, too, Kennedy's shying off a little bit with the whole vaccine thing. You know, he's more focusing on food and other environmental factors because he doesn't want to, you know, as soon as he announced his presidency, all the media were calling him an anti-vaxxer, you know, and he didn't want to make his whole campaign about vaccines. And I think that he's intentionally not directly speaking about that because he doesn't want to turn away, you know, some voters. But he's, you know, he's definitely, I mean, he's been dealing with vaccines, you know, litigation with that and whatnot for many, many years. And he wanted Trump to have a commission. This is another thing. He wanted a vaccine safety commission when Trump was elected. He spoke with Trump before he won the election. But of course, you know, Trump moves in and the people there that were transitioning over power, you know, put a bunch of people on this committee that they knew it would go nowhere. So nothing ever came of it.
Mm.
So, yeah, but so I don't know. I am hopeful. I mean, we'll see what happens over. It's going to be a crazy October. I mean, my fear here in our country is that something's going to happen to where they're going to postpone the election and they're going to finally declare the 25th on Biden and they're going to slide Kamala in as our president. That is my, and then I'm definitely getting on one of Elon's rockets because I can't.
You can come and live in Africa because then at that point we will be less chaotic.
Yes, I truly think that would spark probably civil war over here.
Okay, so I mean, okay, so as we're coming for a landing, what are you recommending to pregnant moms?
Find a doctor that's gonna, first of all, listen to what you want. It's supposed to be a doctor-patient relationship. Do not go to a practice or a provider where they basically tell you what's gonna happen. You don't have a say in the matter. You can't question things. If you have that type of provider, you need to go to a different practice. You know, I have partners that are with me. We don't force anything on our patients. We allow them to make their decision. I mean, there's certain things we have to do because we have to follow certain guidelines because we're employed as well. But we don't force anything, and we answer patients' questions if they have concerns. The other thing I would recommend is, you know, maybe consider not going to go to a birthing center or consider delivering at home, you know. And if you're not pregnant and you're just wanting regular health care, I mean, go to the doctor when you're sick. Try to not go to the hospital. I mean, if you have an appendicitis or a broken bone or you're in a car wreck, I mean, you kind of have to. But otherwise, at this moment, I would try to stay away. But, you know, there's a lot of doctors in my country that are direct primary care models, you know, you still have to be engaged with the system per se, because you're obviously going to have to need hospitals at some point, maybe. But, you know, where they take money, they don't deal with insurance, they don't have to follow all the government regulations because they don't have an electronic health record, etc. And you actually get, you know, medical care. And not a lot of those doctors prescribe a lot of medications. You know, they actually support, you know, they empower patients to be healthy by, you know, counseling them on how to eat and exercise and some other things. So,
Do you have any type of social media presence?
So I'm on Twitter. My handle is @DocBiss. And I'm also on Instagram. I don't know what that handle is because I'm not off on it a lot, but that's about it. I'm old, so I'm not like a social, you know, influencer.
But you are wise. And for that, I'm very grateful for your time, Dr. Kimberly Biss. Thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.